Here we go.
Money talk.
Here comes the money. Money.
Dollar, dollar. Dollar, dollar. Ching, ching, bling, bling, got the chatter. You ain't talking money, then you're talking no matter. Ching, ching, bling, bling, patting pockets. We take the dollar, dollar, can a damn soul stop it?
Here comes the new kid on the block. Hold on, your bets, here's where the buck stops. See, first of all, I'm stepping out on my own. About time I elevated to claim my own throne. Success in my blood, call it homegrown. Pours reeking testosterone. Power and money got me crazy cocky. No longer need you, poppy. I know you're mad because you can't stop me. And if you wonder how this player done scooped your honey, I think she smell my cologne, it's called brand new money. Making major moves, man, ain't a damn thing funny. Pimpin' hood rats to playboy bunnies. They see the
money, 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 money.
They see it, they see it.
Dollar, dollar, and roll with about 50. Like to go out smelling fresh and looking spiffy. Don't like clean money, I want my wrist to be filthy. Pops with that retirement fund, I can't touch till I'm 60. So what am I supposed to do? Rolling through, steady patting them pockets till I'm stacking hole in two. Ching, ching, bling, bling, catching cash and lump. It's a Toro, get a jacket, I'm selling them out my trunk. Whenever, whatever, it takes to shake down a dollar. Muzzle in that direction, wait a minute, holla, holla. All wants to know where they go, where they went. In a mink and Marshall Monday, smelling just like a mint. If you can't see the money, get your eyes clean with Visine. I need five things plus seven digits at a time. See my cheering, chilling. The best, never worse. See, we never get the pebbles, they got the rocks first. Bank vaults, I'm locking. Ching, 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 we're mocking. I'm rocking. My family Christmas stockings are shocking. Fine women, any weather. Naughty denim and leather. Call it tricking, whatever. Son, they get better. I'm one smart cookie, the vet that smacks rookies. My stock's on top, your checks bounce while mine's boogie. Wrist, I must rock it. Chick, stop it, I knock it. Cash looks like I got a gang of fist in my pocket. Fist in my pocket. Fist in my pocket.
Here comes the money. Money, money, money.
We're back. It's episode 19 of Kings of the Ring podcast, and we are coming in with a doozy today. I'm John Cooper.
I'm Steve Emerson.
And this is Kings of the Ring podcast.
Looking at the McMahons.
Yes. Enter Vince and Shane McMahon for...
Here comes the money! Money talks.
Oh God, this is. I'm really looking forward to this one because.
Well, I really enjoyed watching the matches. To be fair,
yeah.
Obviously we'll chat about which ones we've picked, but like, it's been a while since we've actually sat down to review someone, and it was a tough decision for us to who we were going to go back in with.
Yeah.
But I think this one's a nice one. It's just one that there's a lot to talk about with these two.
Yeah.
And it seemed right to just combine them.
Yeah. Yeah, and it seemed right to put them on the leaderboard. We weren't sure whether to do this as a special or whether to do it as a leaderboard. And we decided leaderboard because, you know, they have performed for us. It's not a case of like...
Yeah, I think they're completely valid in being on a leaderboard as well. I think both of them have been integral parts of what we've watched.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely. I mean, to start off, picking the matches was fucking difficult for this.
This is probably the first time we've really had disagreements, like huge disagreements.
Yeah,
it's
a while. So basically, originally we had six matches picked, didn't we? And we basically said whichever one we thought had to go would go, basically, and we'd keep the other five.
We'd chuck down to five. But then we ended up watching... I mean, we'll talk about the other matches we've actually picked, but the two we didn't pick. We both watched Shane versus Steve Blackman.
Yeah.
Now, I enjoyed it, personally. I actually really enjoyed it. I think that obviously the big spot, everyone remembers the big spot of Shane falling off of the Titantron sort of area. But you hated it, didn't you?
Yeah, it's weird, but for me that match was just that one spot, if you know what I mean. Maybe. And even whilst I was watching it, I just kept thinking to myself, it's going to get better, and it just didn't seem to get better in my head. I don't know whether maybe I'd had an overload of fucking hardcore matches at that point or something, but...
Yeah, maybe. I just enjoyed it. I actually gave it a 7.
Did you? I gave it a 5.5 originally.
It was weird. It was weird. And then the other one that you liked and I hated was DX... versus Vince, Shane and Big Show.
Yeah.
Now, I hate anything the Big Show's involved in anyway, let's be honest. But this, to me, was just so OTT and phoned in that it just seemed ridiculous to me. And I hated it. I absolutely hated it.
Yeah, I mean, I did note it whilst I was watching the match. The thing that I thought... it was more about violence and storytelling. Do you know what I mean?
It was just a spot fest of hitting people with weapons. And I just didn't... I preferred the Blackman Shane match because it had more of a story to it. And the fact that Blackman was really being put over as a badass. He beat three of them. Or he was going to beat three of them.
Yeah.
Because obviously TNA come out, who were obviously Shane's heavies at the time, and I just thought it was good. Anyway, there by the by, they're the two matches we got rid of, but we'll start now really looking at Vince, obviously, who came along on the scene first of all, didn't he?
If we just have a little
for people that won't really necessarily remember it. I mean, obviously, I didn't start watching wrestling until the Vince character was already a heavy part of TV, which was just after WrestleMania 14.
Yeah.
Now, by then, obviously, you'll be able to explain more, but obviously, due to mainly the Montreal Screwjob, Vince realised that him as an on-screen heel was money.
Yeah, it's really fucking strange, because obviously, when I started watching wrestling, Vince McMahon was a commentator, and obviously... age at the time, I was like fucking 9, 10, 11 years old, so I was a kid. So to me, he was a commentator. I had no idea that he owned the company. And then the Montreal Screwjob happened, and it was just like, okay, I had no idea this commentator was the brains behind this.
Well, there's no internet, not that you would have been looking at.
'97,
the internet was in a very early state.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, basically, Austin was riding a wave of momentum, which was absolutely unreal at that time, like the wave that fucking Austin took to the top. And as weird as it sounds, as good as the roster is, when you talk about the Attitude Era and the stars that were about at the time, there was no heel... that was a strong enough character to stand with Austin at his peak. So Vince McMahon made complete sense. But the perfect thing about it was Vince didn't have a rivalry in the sense of he was having matches with Austin. He was still being the owner of the company trying to get heavies to do the dirty work for him. And then obviously you had that Rumble in 99 where Vince ended up being entered in it, won the Royal Rumble. And this was their first match, bar a match that happened on Raw, which ended in about 2 minutes because Dude Love came out. So
yeah. Well, obviously, after Mania 14, you have Vince and Austin fight not long after that, don't they? A couple of weeks after on Raw.
Yeah, and then Dude Love comes out.
Because obviously the whole way that Vince and Austin, obviously people are going to know this, but for people that don't. Well, the whole reason that Vince and Austin became a rivalry was because Austin was anti-establishment, and Vince wanted him to be a model champion for him, and Austin was just refusing. So Vince was obviously getting more and more frustrated with this, and then Austin stunned Vince in Madison Square Garden the night after Mania, wasn't it? He done that. Yeah. That was the night after Mania.
Yeah.
And that blew the roof off the place. And I can imagine that Vince laid there after receiving it thinking, wow, this is where we're going.
And on top of that, the worst stunner I've ever seen in my entire fucking life.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He got slightly better.
He did learn how to bump eventually, didn't he? But I think the thing is, with this first match, we've gone with Austin McMahon sent Valentine's Day Massacre in a steel cage match where the winner goes to WrestleMania, or Austin has to win to go to WrestleMania, yeah, or something like that. Yeah,
what happened, obviously, you got, this is where the no chance in hell thing was born out of not long before this, before the Rumble.
It was the Rumble, before, yeah. Yeah.
Because before the Rumble, Vince had said, there is no chance in hell that Steve Austin will win the Rumble. Put him in at number one. Shawn Michaels, who is the commissioner at the time, decide Vince is going to be number two. They then obviously go into the Rumble. Vince ends up winning thanks to The Rock interfering at the end. It's Vince and Steve Austin left. Yeah. Austin beats the shit out of him. Rock comes down. Vince sneaks the win. But the night after, in typical you wrestling way that you have to suspend disbelief, McMahon gives up his right to the to the title shot. Michaels comes on the Titantron and says, "You've booked yourself out. Steve Austin's been checked in." Now, that's stupid. That Vince is the master manipulator. Vince is has had a massive oversight and seen that if he gives up his title shot, Austin gets it. That's kind of, this is what I mean about nowadays with the IWC, and sometimes you just have to suspend disbelief to enjoy a rivalry.
Yeah.
No one says that Austin McMahon had some stupid moments in it, but it fucking did.
Yeah.
It fucking had some ridiculous things that would never happen and shouldn't happen in wrestling and won't happen now because the wrestling community would go mental about it. That doesn't make sense. How are you doing that? That makes no fucking sense whatsoever. It's bollocks, but it happens now. So
it was Vince Russo booking 101, wasn't it, really? Like,
oh, yeah, 100%.
Because, obviously, like, to go back, I mean, we'll cover this on another podcast, but the ultimate goal at this point was to get Rock and Austin at WrestleMania against each other.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, like, the IWC, as you say, they get right up nowadays that someone doesn't win a Rumble and goes straight to face the champion at Mania, like, in a simple way. Back here... Yeah. On the same night Vince McMahon won the Rumble, The Rock won an I Quit match to take the title off fucking Mankind.
Yeah, by cheating.
By cheating. The next night, obviously, Vince gives up his number one contender spot. They're now booked in this match that we're going to cover. A week after that, The Rock loses the title to Foley in an empty arena match. They then draw before this match in a last man standing to then have a ladder match tomorrow to decide that The Rock's going to be the champion or the next.
Exactly. But when people look back at that period in the run-up to WrestleMania 15, they all look back at it fondly.
Yeah. But if you've done that...
If that was booked now...
Could you imagine?
They go mental. They go absolutely mental. It's ridiculous. How can you have three title changes between the Rumble and Mania?
Fucking hell, three title changes in the space of a month. Like,
yeah. It's insane. And yeah, it just annoys me. But then we all look back at it fondly, and I just wish people would have the same suspension of disbelief now in certain rivalries and certain things that happen. But yeah, so basically, we lead up to this in the fact that Austin wants to get his hand on Vince so badly that he decides that, again, something stupid. Why would you do it if the whole point of this was you wanted the title? That's what you really wanted that much. He offers to give up his title shot if Vince can beat him at Valentine's Day Massacre in a steel cage. And that's where we get to here.
Yeah. Which obviously is not the most easy storyline to tell, but that, you know, Vince Russo cooking. Fuck me.
Rock and Mankind before this match, though, as you just mentioned, I put a couple of notes down. I love the finish.
Yeah.
As much as fans hated it, like, because obviously the finish in this was they both, and it was a last man standing match, they both ended up hitting each other and were down for the 10 count.
Yeah.
I thought perfect booking for their rivalry, that was.
Yeah.
And it was making Rock look more solid, harder to beat, more of a badass than he'd ever looked.
Yeah.
I just love that rivalry. Rock Mankind's one of my favourite rivalries.
And again, a very underrated rivalry at that as well.
Massively, massively.
Because they had the Rock and Sock connection, everyone forgets that they actually went to war with each other.
Right. So. If I mean this hand on heart, if there's no Mankind in the Rock's career, the Rock never gets to the level he's at.
Absolutely. Yeah, completely agree.
The Rock was transformed from being a bit of a pussy into really believable main event superstar by Mankind.
Exactly. Yeah, and he'd done the same thing with Triple H as well a year later. But we'll talk about that obviously on another podcast because we're going to go off on one of our massive tangents.
Yeah, that's fine. We'll get to that.
Holy fuck, the pop for Steve Austin.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I put a little note just saying Austin and Vince, what a rivalry. Just so believable. So believable.
And do you know what? I reckon employees from this time till now have become so much worse for bosses because of this.
Vince guarantees that no corporate member will interfere.
Which is brilliant on that. I mean, the beginning of the match, the first bit of the match where obviously Austin's in the cage, Vince manages to get him chasing round and gets in the cage, and where he's hanging off the door and swinging, trying to kick him, fuck it, he's done me. I was pissing myself.
Yeah, buckled. There was one thing in the package before.
Yeah.
They showed that Vince beat Austin on Raw after a gauntlet match. And I put on it, Austin's no more of a Superman than Cena. Like, Cena's no more of a Superman than Austin was.
Yeah.
But again, it's something no one whinges about. At this point, Austin was beating the odds, like insane odds.
Yeah.
Absolutely insane odds. Like, but we just believed it.
Yeah.
We just enjoyed it, and it came across as enjoyable. So again, I mean, Austin at first, pop in hell was what I put.
Yeah, I just wrote Pop City. Like, I couldn't. It's absolutely unreal. And I think as well, going back to your point you just said, the difference is back then, there was no platform to complain. You just basically, what was put in front of you, you got on with it, because there's no way you can change it.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas now, people sit there behind their keyboard and think, oh, Daniel Bryan didn't win the Rumble. If we start a hashtag up, that's going to make Vince change his mind. But no, just enjoy the ride. He knows what he's doing. Yeah,
exactly. The cat and mouse start for me was quality. I enjoyed it.
Brilliant.
I put here early on that Michael Cole and King are doing a good job.
They were doing a good job, actually.
It's not often we can say that.
Yeah.
But I thought they did a good job in the fact of selling, like building, because obviously the fact there wasn't much physical occasion to begin with.
Yeah.
And Cole and King were able to fill those gaps well.
They did, yeah, they did do all right with that, actually, to say that. And as you say, the cat and mouse thing was brilliant. And Austin pretending to tweak his knee and Vince falling for it to get the first blow, it was brilliant. Like,
yeah.
The story told in this match is very, very good.
I completely agree. I thought from Belwart, from the minute they started the match, I thought considering it must have had to be really thought out, this, to be able to get it watchable. Because when we said we're going to put this in there, because obviously it has to be in there, because it's one of the biggest moments in their rivalry.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, fuck, this is going to be hard to watch.
Yeah.
And I was pleasantly surprised.
Definitely.
The smile on Austin's face when he plays possum and ends up being able to kick the shit out of him was phenomenal.
It was absolutely brilliant. And then obviously, I mean, this is something I think we'll discuss throughout this podcast, but when McMahon takes the bump from the cage through the table, like very early on, he hasn't got a fucking take that, hasn't he?
No way. It's ridiculous.
There's going to be worse bumps later, but I instantly thought, because it was quite a nasty looking bump as well. The table didn't just break,
He broke his coccyx, supposedly.
He did, didn't he? Yeah, he broke his coccyx. And then obviously you had the drama of the fucking EMTs coming down, Austin in the ring getting the ump, and them saying, oh, the match is going to get called off. And basically Austin's like, no, I'm not having it. Chases him, and as he's going after Vince on the stretcher, he's just pulling different people back and throwing them out of the way. And that image just, again, it just cracked me up, because I was just like, That looks so funny. Like you've got...
Oh, I loved it. I loved all of that because Austin getting on the mic halfway through the match and saying, "Is the son of a bitch still breathing?"
Yeah.
And the crowd, when he says, "I'm gonna finish this. I'm gonna finish this off," like the crowd are bloodthirsty.
No, no.
They literally want to see Austin kill Vince McMahon in front of them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that if Austin had killed them. Had killed Vince, the crowd would have hid him and kept him away from the cops, and they would have all taken him home and looked after him and kept him as a fugitive.
Yeah,
I think they would have been happy with it.
which is unbelievable for what wrestling fans were like back in that day and age. Obviously.
Oh, it's ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. Once he throws him into the wheels the gurney into the steel cage.
Yeah,
and Austin gets him into the ring. The biggest Austin chant I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
The crowd for this match are so into this.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They are fully on board with, right, Austin's finally getting his hands on Vince McMahon. I want to see him beat the shit out of him. He kicks the crap out of him. Then Austin goes to walk out the cage. And this is what I love. A bloody Vince McMahon. Flipping the bird at Austin.
Brilliant. Vince is selling it so well. He's bloody by this point. He looks fucked, but he still sells brilliantly the fact of a desperate man. He obviously wants what happens later. We know why he did it, but it's just brilliant. It's brilliant that he's just there, absolutely out on his feet, but still manages to flip Austin off with pure hatred.
I was about to say, it's the hatred on his face whilst he's doing it, which is what makes the moment.
That's what makes this rivalry, though. It's everything about it. Just genuinely, if you had asked me at that age, at that time, do you think Vince and Steve Austin hate each other? I would have said 100% yes.
Yeah, completely. They are so believable in... Yeah, as you say, I believe from the moment here that fucking McMahon hated him. Like, that image... It happens a couple of times, doesn't it? He goes to leave, yeah. And then it happens again.
He double flips him off the next time.
Double flips him off the next time. Then Austin comes back in, gives him the stunner, and my God, the fucking roof come off the place when he hit the stunner on that last one.
Brilliantly. It was phenomenal. Phenomenal. But he then mouths off to Vince, and obviously you kind of think something's going to happen, and that's when Paul White comes out of the ring.
Which, do you know what? Cole does a blinding job of selling that. Like,
oh, brilliant. Yeah, he does. I think Cole was on his A-game to that night. I think he sold it with passion as well. King, that's Paul White.
And do you know what as well? Like, wrestling fans that have watched it in the last 10 years will never understand how big a moment that was to see a WCW guy
first
turn
time.
Up. Yeah,
that's the first time that we saw, especially that unannounced, because I had no idea that was happening.
No.
Absolutely no idea. Obviously, I didn't. There probably was still dirt sheets around on the internet, but I just didn't read them. I didn't know anything about it. And to see him come out, I was in shock.
Yeah.
I remember staying up. I stayed up to watch this pay-per-view. This whole period, I stayed up for every single one.
Yeah.
And I stayed up around my granddad's watching it, and I was like, fucking hell.
God,
what the fuck?
Yeah, I looked at it. I was like, "That's the giant." Like, he was on Nitro a couple of weeks ago, but it was obviously he was the first of many to come after. But yeah, Big Show. Obviously, he's there throwing him back and forth into the cage, and then the last one goes to throw him in. The cage breaks, and Austin falls off to win the match, which I thought was brilliant because it was like Vince thought, "I've got him here. This guy will come out." He'll put him down, I'll win, Austin ain't going to Mania.
Again, imagine if Cena won that way.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? And then...
What I didn't really realise until the end of the match, I was like, only time I've seen that black cage ever used.
Yeah.
And it was for that, and that was the reason.
Yeah.
And obviously, but when you don't really realise that before.
No.
I'm not having the hardened wrestling fans of that generation, even the ones like we would regard ourselves as now, didn't notice that was going to happen because of the black cage. I'm not having it at all.
Yeah. No, mate, right, mate. No, it's true. After that, they started using like the chicken wire cage, I suppose it is, isn't it? Like that sort of the mesh cage sort of thing. That was, because it used to be the big blue. And then, this one made that one appearance, and then it went to...
Well, it was meshed before that, though, wasn't it? The mesh had taken over before this. Yeah, sorry, Hayes. So that's why. I just enjoyed the match. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote better than I was expecting.
Yeah.
Props to Vince McMahon. He doesn't need to take the bump off the cage. And thoroughly enjoyed it. For the first time watching it in about 10 years. So I gave it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, I gave it 7.5.
Okay.
I enjoyed it.
All right.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was quality. Surprised how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was good.
Yeah. Well, the next match, speaking...
Obviously, we should probably say, because obviously the next match is involving Shane, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, so Shane's getting introduced into this one. It's still Vince and Austin, but if you want to talk about a convoluted fucking storyline, this is it, and I'm going to put the video package in here.
A diabolical plot was put into action after Stone Cold recaptured the WWF title. A plot that preyed on the innocence of a young girl and cast father against son.
You're not my father anymore!
A plot of betrayal.
I care about Stephanie. I care about her safety.
Of course.
And her welfare.
A plot of deception.
Vince McMahon needs Stone Cold Steve Austin.
A plot whose premise was power.
I present the higher power.
What? Who is it?
The greater power is cold and calculated.
It's me, Austin!
Oh, son of a...
It was me all along, Austin. You all bought it. Even my family. Even my immediate family bought it.
Mr. McMahon is frantic. His daughter, Stephanie, is missing.
She's obviously been abducted by some members of the ministry.
I don't feel safe. The only place I really feel safe is when I'm with my dad.
Every damn one of you were made fools of!
Step away from my dad!
Where to, Stephanie?
Stephanie McMahon has been abducted by the Undertaker!
I was taken against my will and dressed in a black gown for an unholy wedding.
You may now kiss your friend!
How in the hell can you put your lovely daughter to such an
to suddenly feel like you don't know your own flesh and blood anymore. It's pretty confusing.
There is no price I will not pay.
Dad, Shane, how could you be so cruel to me?
It's just business.
Business. Business.
How long that goes on? Wait a minute. Hey, what was that? We've got a new WWF champion, the Rattlesnake. Has been screwed.
Love doesn't have anything to do with it. It's just business.
Well, Vince, let's talk business. I stepped down as the CEO of this company. Not before I handpicked my own successor. It's going to be a little less formal, more casual at the office. Cut off jeans. How about a little profanity in the office? Well,
Austin 316 says bullshit. Jack, son of a little bat. I just whipped your ass.
Drinking on the job. Yep. Allow Stephanie and me to introduce you to the new CEO.
Oh, hell yeah! Well, Vince don't make good CEOs! The McMahon's face!
At our next pay-per-view event, which is King of the Ring, it will be me in one corner. Vince, it'll be you, that little son of yours, in the other corner.
You know, the only thing worse than Stone Cold being the World Wrestling Federation champion is Stone Cold being the CEO, the Chief Executive Officer.
Looks like coffee breaks are being replaced by happy hour.
Because what I want to do right now is have a good old-fashioned beer-drinking contest.
So why don't you use your resources to go get old Stone Cold and a couple of cold beers?
Want to change Shane McMahon's salary and just scratch that off? We want that is now the beer budget.
I'll have another cold beer.
You fight for looking stupid, then get your ass out the door.
Stone Cold, you have disgraced the World Wrestling Federation.
I got a little something for you.
What is this?
That's cow manure. The CC brothers are bringing in cow manure.
Mr. McMahon's office will never be the same. It's going to stink to high heaven.
Can you imagine the flies?
But hear this, Austin. We take this CEO title of yours.
You hang it above the ring. And the only way to reach up and grab it all, Austin, is by climbing a ladder.
talk to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Jay and I are risking it all. We are risking it all.
It's winner take all.
The ladder match for ownership of the WWF.
It's winner take all.
Ownership of the WWF.
Shane had obviously been part of the corporation for a while. Even before this, before the rivalry match we've just spoke about, Shane was heavily involved in the storyline. Obviously, he was training his dad for the Rumble match, and he was still involved in leading the corporation.
We didn't even get a chance to discuss fucking Shane training Vince for the Rumble match before the last one, did we?
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. You should probably try and find a package and chuck it in if you can.
Yeah, I'll have a look, mate.
Yeah, have a look and see what you can find.
Yeah, I mean, this story was... It's kind of Vince Russo to a T, really. It's the best way I can explain it.
A lot of people look back on this storyline and think it was stupid.
Mm.
I love it.
Yeah, I do, because it's so ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? Because, like, obviously, this storyline, before Mania, Undertaker was talking about Stephanie and stuff like you know, basically what the whole nucleus of his rivalry is. Before Austin's even won the title, Vince is planning on fucking turning him over.
Yeah, exactly.
To take it off him.
The brilliant thing is that Vince has always got this plan in mind, because he ultimately, I think you could probably, if you want to go in deep to it, he doesn't trust The Rock to get the job done.
Yeah.
Against Austin.
Yeah.
Which is fine, and that's cool.
Yeah.
And so you've got The Undertaker building his ministry, right? But constantly referencing a higher power.
Yeah.
Now, there were some ridiculous rumours online about who the higher power could be.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, we go further down the line. Undertaker abducts Stephanie in probably my favourite Raw moment of all time.
Where to, Stephanie?
when Austin comes down and saves Stephanie is my favourite
Raw moment of all time.
So Austin comes down and saves. Vince thanks him. And you think, and at this point, you're kind of becoming... And kind of thinking, well,
Vince ain't that bad, guy.
Yeah, Vince ain't that bad. He's obviously got a heart, because his daughter is his heart. Right? And then we find out on a Raw when Undertaker decides to send down the higher power to the ring to reveal it. Vince comes on the Titantron. Just get on with it, damn it. We want to know who it is. And it ends up being Vince McMahon, who has basically put his daughter through absolute hell just because he hates one man. He's built an absolute army of people to just fuck over one person. And obviously, Vince's wife and daughter do not take kindly to this.
Yeah.
They come out and they announce that Steve Austin is the new CEO of the company after Linda had stepped down.
Yeah.
Which ensued a month's worth of entertaining TV, to say the least.
I think...
of Austin firing people because they couldn't drink enough beer.
It was brilliant. I remember... the Raw, when you found out it was Vince. And at the time, Anster used to watch wrestling, so this shows how popular wrestling was at the time. All my mates used to watch it.
Yeah.
And I didn't see the Raw, but he rung me the next morning, presumed that I had, and he went, "It's me, Austin," like over the phone. I was like, "What?" And then obviously I went and watched it. I was like, "All right, I'll get it now." And that's been like a running joke with me and Anthony for, well, since that happened. So that's what, 16 years ago?
Yeah.
That's how funny that moment is in my life, like, sort of thing. And yeah, the month's worth of TV afterwards was brilliant. One thing I took out of it was how green was Stephanie McMahon.
Oh, ridiculous. When they showed a package, obviously you've put it in, haven't you? It shows bits of her talking. And yeah, how could you do this to me?
I feel safe when I'm with my dad.
It was entertaining, to say the least.
Then we get to the actual night and to the match. Vince comes down to fucking nuclear heat. Like, unbelievable amount of heat that Vince McMahon had at that point. I suppose we have just watched him fuck his daughter over to take Austin out.
Just to stop Austin winning the title. Like, that's how far he would go, that he would fuck over his only daughter.
And then, in a bit that I couldn't remember, Steve Blackman comes out to replace Shane McMahon.
Yeah, I didn't remember that, because obviously Shane's pretending to be injured, so... Shawn Michaels has allowed them to get a replacement. Vince chooses Blackman, and then GTV comes out.
GTV,
which again is something they really fucked up on, because I'd love to know who was behind GTV. I wish I knew.
Yeah,
it was a brilliant angle, and they should have really had something decent like behind that.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and then obviously Shane goes to leave. Michaels stops him with the Mean Street Posse, by the way.
Yep.
Which was good to see them. And then Michaels brings him back to the ring. And then obviously, like, he's like, "You're fighting," sort of thing. Then Austin's music, or the glass breaks, and Austin's music hits. And again, I don't think anyone has ever been as over as Steve Austin.
I don't think anyone ever will be.
No, it's unbelievable pop for the unbelievable heat that Vince gets. So, that, obviously, this is why this rivalry is so fondly remembered, because you will never have a more hated heel versus a more popular babyface.
No, never, never, ever, ever. It's a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and we were lucky to see it.
Yeah.
So obviously the match starts. I forgot to mention, just before this match... Billy Gunn had just won King of the Ring.
Yeah.
My name's Billy. I just won King of the Ring. But everyone still thinks that I absolutely suck.
Billy Gunn had such an incredible fall from grace after winning that King of the Ring.
I said, what an athlete. I said, I don't know. I don't really know what didn't click.
I think I said it on a previous podcast. I genuinely believe he was originally meant to be the person that ran over Steve Austin. I genuinely fully believe that. Then he got injured and they needed a replacement and went with Rikishi.
Yeah, maybe.
I genuinely believe that in my heart of hearts. Had he have not got injured, he would have been built up a bit more over that year to maybe get to the point where it was believable for him to be fighting Steve Austin, but he got injured and was out for a year and it fucked it. Obviously when Austin got run over as well, Billy Gunn wasn't with the rest of DX, so it's an easy story to go with, obviously, but massive fall from grace, definitely. Another thing I've commented on before the match, I love Shane wearing mock-ups of his rivals' t-shirts for matches.
Yeah, always brilliant.
Shane McMahon 632, I think, was the t-shirt for this one. which is brilliant. Obviously, Austin attacks both McMahons to start. He's in control very early.
No corporate interference allowed as well.
No corporate interference. Vince takes a low blow, and JR turns around and goes, Shane takes a low blow, and JR turns around and goes, "I don't think Vince will be having any grandchildren," at which point... Yeah. Triple H turns and smirks at the camera at that point. McMahon suckers Austin in into Shane's clothesline after playing cat and mouse. Just spot on, isn't it?
Definitely.
Austin stumps a mud hole in Vince. Vince trying to give Shane a boost up, which fucking cracked me up. He tries to do the old school when you're climbing over the fence, hand on your knee and Shane climb up to get the briefcase as a ladder went missing. And then Austin stuns both McMahons, goes for the briefcase.
Your connection's going again, mate.
Is it going again? Can you hear me?
It goes in and out at the moment.
All right, hang on. Just check. Yeah, no, my internet's going. What about yours? Your reception, all right?
I'm fine, yeah. Mine's, I'm sitting in my front room right by my hub and I've got full bars.
Right, okay. Yeah, I've got full bars. I'll keep an eye on it. Just
well, no, it's alright now for some reason.
Yeah, okay, mate. Alright, no worries. Yeah, Austin stuns both McMahons, goes for the briefcase, and then was it Big Boss Man that was meant to have...
Yeah, it's Boss Man that was meant to have... look, what happens is the briefcase gets... When Austin's up there, the briefcase gets pulled away from him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like by the what it's hanging from. And yeah, the story was after this match that it was Boss Man that helped. They gave Boss Man a vacation or something. I can't remember what it is. They gave him some sort of prize for it.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Vince climbs up after him. Shane pushes both men off the ladder and then basically runs up to grab the briefcase and win the match. Wasn't a bad match, to be honest.
No, I enjoyed it. It was surprising. Most of these matches, I think it helps when you go into the match is not really expecting much.
Yeah.
And I went into all of these matches thinking, well, it's going to be all right, but it's not going to be anything special.
Yeah.
And, I gave it a 7. I thought it was well done. I thought, again, it was very well thought out.
Yeah.
It was just an enjoyable match. It was an enjoyable match with not many mistakes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't say much other than that. 7 for me.
Yeah, exact same, mate. I gave it a 7. I think that's probably about the right score, to be perfectly honest with you. 7 out of 10. The next match, Vince versus Shane in a no-holds-barred street fight at WrestleMania 17.
Yeah, now I suppose we better explain to people how we got from them being together to them being against each other.
These two split up and got back together a few times, didn't they, in this time? But obviously...
The main thing is here, it's because Vince basically decided to become an arsehole, even more than usual, but in a different way, in the fact that he started cracking on with Trish Stratus.
Yeah.
And he wanted a divorce from Linda.
He drugged
Linda, didn't he?
Yeah, this is what I was going to say. Vince left about 6 months previous to that because he wanted to try for a baby and refer to himself as a genetic jackhammer. And basically he was off shagging for 6 months sort of thing. And Shane was wrote off TV for a bit because you had Mick Foley as commissioner. Basically I think Linda McMahon had given Mick Foley a contract which made him turn on Linda, him wanting a divorce, and yeah, basically was just flaunting an affair about on live TV with Trish Stratus whilst medicating his wife. This is probably the most evil Vince McMahon.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, to say the evil Vince McMahon did give his daughter to The Undertaker at one point.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, this is true. All right, fair enough. Point taken.
It's tough to decide which of Vince was... which was Vince's the most evil. Yeah, so basically Shane's sticking up for his mum more than anything.
Yeah.
And the package makes it seem so personal. So personal.
And
let me take you back. A little walk down memory lane, shall we?
I want a divorce.
I think you have a very bright future.
I would do anything for you, Mr. McMahon.
It felt so good when Trish and I brought my wife Linda out in the wheelchair. Stood in front of my wife.
Wait a minute! There's Shane McMahon!
You are my son, Shane. You calm down. Just give your dad a hug.
Shane, put our hands on his own man! Shane McMahon has beat the hell out of his father!
I grew up with my dad watching him do exactly what he wants to do to whomever he wants to do without worried about ramifications. So my question to you, Dad, is do you want to play? That's right, Dad. I'm challenging you to a match at WrestleMania.
I've never backed out from a challenge in my life.
You've got me at WrestleMania.
I will never, ever forgive your mother for giving birth to you.
There's only one way and one man that can make history happen. I have acquired WCW.
That's right, all my competition.
There's only one small caveat. Time Warner, they've signed the contract. And I will sign the contract.
But I'll sign it at WrestleMania.
What is the fate of WCW? The very fate
of WCW is in my hands.
You have to grab your competition by the throat, and you've got to squeeze the life out of your competition. Just like I did to WCW. Just like I'm going to do to my son, Shane.
Surprise, Dad. Your ego has gotten the best of you. You wanted to finalize this deal, WCW, at WrestleMania. Well, Dad, that's just the opportunity that I was looking for. The deal is finalized. And the name on the contract does say McMahon. However, the contract reads Shane McMahon. WCW kicked your ass in the past. That's exactly what's going to happen to you at WrestleMania.
The ridiculous thing is the fact that Vince McMahon bought WCW whilst his rivalry was going on.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. I mean, again, it's a story for another day. I just wish the invasion was booked slightly differently.
Mm.
But I heard on Jericho's podcast with Hugh Morris.
Yeah.
The actual booking for this match at the end, the WCW stars were meant to get involved.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but something happened in which they pissed off management in the week leading up to it. Like, obviously, Mania season.
Yeah.
So I assume that, I can't remember exactly what it was. I should have really listened back to the Jericho podcast. If you get a chance, listen to Jericho and Hugh Morris talk about it. It's quite a good chat anyway. But they talk about this whole invasion. And yeah, they were meant to, the finish was meant to be the WCW stars helping Shane win.
Ah, okay. Because it's like, the other thing as well that's interesting was this match originally was meant to be Mick Foley versus Vince McMahon.
Yeah.
But Foley was like, no, I want to stay retired, and then went on to get his book deal, in which a couple of years later, the reason he was the special referee in the Kevin Nash Triple H Hell in a Cell, where he takes the beating, was basically to end the lawsuit without either of them losing money. So basically to just get into good graces and end it, and Foley was like, well, look, I'll just referee that match and I'll take a pasting off of Triple H and Kevin Nash. But that this all stems from originally it meant to be being Foley versus Vince at this WrestleMania.
Well,
which is weird, isn't it? Like, to think.
It would be weird, yeah. It would be weird. Weird how they would have rebooked it. But yeah, so obviously we'll start with Shane beating the holy hell out of his dad.
Yeah, I love the fact at the beginning when Shane comes in a ring, Vince just with the evil, like, look on his face, just slap Shane round the face, which, obviously leads to Shane just pummeling Vince McMahon. And then Steph slaps Shane as well. Like, it's brilliant. And then
Then there's more choking, which Daniel Bryan probably watched and thought, what the fuck?
Yeah, exactly. then out comes the kendo stick. Shane starts beating the shit out of Vince with the kendo stick. Shane goes to the Spanish announce table and starts taking it apart.
My note here was, how old do you think Shane was at the time?
Mid-30s, mid to late 30s, do you think?
He was 31.
Was he really?
He was 31, he's 45 now.
So I suppose he would have been in his prime at this point, wouldn't he? Like,
he was 31 years old, yeah. Only a year older than we are now, mate. Well, fucking 4 months older than I am now.
Yeah, a year older than what we are now at that point, with the potential to take over the biggest wrestling company.
Yeah, and having the potential to go, nah, fuck it, I don't really want this company. I'm going to go and forge my own businesses elsewhere. Fuck that, I'm not just going to walk in my old man's shoes.
it's unbelievable, isn't it? That's slightly made me angry, to be honest.
Yeah, so Shane sets Vince up on that table.
Yeah.
But then Steph pulls Vince away.
Steph pulls him out of the way, and then Trish brings Linda down.
Shane's crash through the table looks really painful.
Oh, that was a major crash and burn, that one. Like that.
that was
brilliant. And my God, how hot is Trish Stratus at this point?
Oh, good Lord.
In fact, my notes say, my God, Trish, hotness. That's it.
Yeah. That's valid, yeah. She is unreal.
And then Trish and Steph start having the cat fight. Like, this match is fucking...
Well, she's Trish slaps Vince first. So obviously that's straight away the turn there is in the match is obviously Trish comes down, you think she's still with Vince, but she isn't. She turns and she slaps Vince around the face, and then Steph attacks Trish.
Yeah. Wakes it up and gets a slap for his troubles.
Yep.
And then Trish chases Stephanie away.
And they leave. And which is good.
Then Vince just sort of looks up and sees Linda on his own and just goes over and stalks her, like just he's so evil in the way.
Oh, it's so evil. So evil. His face is scary.
Yeah, exactly. And then Foley stops him, and as he's wheeling Linda away, Vince nails him with a steel chair.
Twice.
And I wrote, because there's a point when obviously Vince picks her up off the wheelchair and puts her on the apron, and they're literally like, they're so close to each other. I'd be pissing myself with laughter. Like, I wouldn't be able not to laugh at the way Vince was being and how convincing Linda was being. Like, obviously,
yeah.
It's a serious moment, obviously, it's meant to be, but I know as a person, if I was in them shoes, I'd be trying so hard not to crack up looking at Vince McMahon staring at me like an evil bastard, essentially, isn't he, at this point?
Oh, yeah, big time, yeah.
Yeah, and then Vince sits Linda in the corner and just starts throwing weapons into the ring to basically beat his son up in front of her. And then just starts unloading on Shane with shots with a trash can. Then he gets him in the corner and he sets him up, and Shane on his knees just points behind him, and Linda stands up, and my God, the pop is unreal.
Oh,
like, especially because a lot of people speak about that WrestleMania and was like, oh, I didn't realise the crowd was that good because the sound just went up. But obviously, from watching it on TV, the pop was unbelievable when Linda stood up.
Yeah, like, huge, absolutely huge.
And it was one of them moments, he's like, right, now Vince is about to get his comeuppance. Gets a low blow off Linda McMahon. Then Foley starts beating on Vince and gets him in the corner. And then Shane puts the trash can in Vince's face. And this, still to this day, this spot impresses the fucking hell out of me.
Well, I remember vividly watching this match live, and I thought, no, he can't do it.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to fuck it up. He's not going to reach. And I remember popping for real in my house.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I went absolutely mental when he pulled that off. And obviously he gets the free count afterwards. Bear in mind, this is someone who's not a trained wrestler. He doesn't exactly look like an athletic person. Jumps from one side of a 20 by 20 ring. So that's 20. It's unbelievable. I don't know how he does it.
Like, no, it's just impressive. It's ridiculously impressive. And I enjoyed the match again.
Yeah, I gave it 7.5 out of 10.
I gave it seven, but yeah, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I just wrote unbelievable storytelling. Because you know, obviously, technical wrestling match it was not, but the story told was brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Loved it.
100%. It's weird. I don't know whether it's something to do with the fact that these two, like Vince and Shane, have the wrestling in their blood. They know how to tell a story, but they just pull it off every time. Every time they pull off a good story.
Now the next match happens a month later. Shane versus the Big Show in a last man standing match, of which my first comment is, I wonder if MB has got another fat Big Show rant in there.
Oh, he is pretty big at this point.
He's fucking
Which way did he go?
Which way did he go? Shane and the Beanstalk. Such a good segment.
Great promo before. I loved it. Absolutely loved it. It really set it up nicely.
Yeah.
But the problem they had here with this match is that Angle versus Benoit submission Iron Man match was before it.
It's ridiculous, isn't it? Like, Yeah, and that match was unreal, if I remember. Yeah, yeah, like when I like, and do you know what? It sounds so weird. I'd love to. You'll never see that again, I don't think, an Ultimate Submission match, because you don't have submission wrestlers or like two.
I think the people that could do. I think you could. But I think you might see a women one.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I think Sasha Charlotte could pull it off.
Yeah, yeah, or Sasha, Becky, like,
one, yeah.
their match they had at the fucking NXT TakeOver was unreal, but yeah, that match was absolutely insane. It was also like the start of Benoit being fucking built up, an Angle kind of proving I'm a main eventer, you know?
Oh, like, yeah, 100%. I put here, obviously, my first few notes was I love the idea of the fairy tale, Jack and the Beanstalk, Shane and the Giant and all that.
Yeah.
But obviously, Shane being a face is so... It's interesting.
Mm.
I like Shane as a face.
It's so strange that, obviously, at this point is the months leading up to the invasion and Shane owns WCW and he's like a very likeable face at this point. And Vince, who's owning the company you're sitting there watching, is a despised heel. And it's the way that they've got to flip that in the next couple of months, which they do, obviously. But
they do, yeah.
But at this point, you wouldn't understand how they do it. You'd kind of, in a way, as a fan, you're like, I kind of want to watch WCW because I like Shane, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, I put, God, I miss Shane. What a charismatic little bastard.
Yeah, I wrote, here comes the money, my God, I missed that music, is what...
Yeah.
No, because I think that was the first time he used it, wasn't it? But that's such a good theme tune. Shane starts unloading on Show with a kendo stick to start off the match. Big Show slows him down with a clothesline, but then Shane comes back with chair shots. I mean, it's quite easy to call this match because not a lot happens, really.
Oh, no, not much. No, it's all obviously all building to a big spot at the end, but
Shane, this is what I quite like, especially for it being a last man standing match. Shane tries to gag the Big Show with, like...
Chlorophyll.
Yeah. It's just such a unique thing to do in a ladder
match. I think it was good. I think it was brilliant to watch it. I thought it was just clever again.
Yeah.
Because it took up a surprising amount of the time without it seeming like it took up that much time.
Yeah, and it was kind of like, oh, it's the little guy outsmarting the giant, basically. Yeah, like, this is how you got to beat the giant. And then Vince comes down with a chair and nails Shane McMahon to basically give Big Show the chance to take control of the match. And again, Vince just looks like such an evil bastard at this point. It's unbelievable. Big Show takes control with a side slam. Then he does his big chop in the corner, followed by a choke slam. It's basically he's just in control, doing all his usual spots at this point.
Yeah, he's punishing him a little bit. Yeah. Throws him off the top rope, and then Test comes down and makes a save.
Yeah. I
can't really remember why Test did it.
I believe the SmackDown before, Big Show just beat the shit out of Test, basically. So this is Test basically coming down to return the favour and help his mate. But it wasn't very well explained, if you know what I mean. It was just kind of exactly. Test is coming down.
Big Show goes after Test and then goes after Shane with a lead pipe.
Yeah, which that's a really good moment. You've got, obviously, Shane's hitting him with that sign, I believe it is. And then he's sort of taking Big Show at the back and then Big Show just pops out from behind the curtain with a pole and Shane just runs off, as you would, obviously, but like it's just a really good visual sort of thing. Then Shane, whilst running away, is like, right, I'm going to climb up this Titantron because, you know, why wouldn't I?
And Show attempts to climb up after him.
Yeah, Test and then
pummels him.
Yeah, Test, and then again, this spot I popped in my living room for this as well. It was another one I sat up and watched and popped from my living room. Shane dives off a Titantron, which must be, what do you reckon, about
40, 50 foot, 40. I reckon.
And again, at this point in time, he's potentially taking his company over. He has no business doing this. He doesn't need to do it, but he does an elbow drop off the top of a 50 foot Titantron. I just wrote, holy shit. And then obviously Test puts him on like that boom mic thing.
Yeah, he lifts him up. He lifts up his lifeless body because it's the last man standing match.
Yeah.
So he lifts him up. So Shane's technically standing.
Yeah.
on this light thing, and that's how he wins the match.
I gave it a 6.5 out of 10. I just wrote not a bad match, and the ending's ridiculous. But it was just a match.
It got a 7 to me. It got a 7.
Did you get a 7 for you?
Yeah, I'll show it a 7. Again, good story. It was a good story told. Vince got involved. Tess got involved. It was just the big finish at the end. I thought the idea of the chlorophyll in the middle of the match slowed it down nicely, showed that Shane could have outsmarted him. If it wasn't for Vince, he could have probably beaten him on his own.
Yeah.
I just really enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a good match.
Yeah, it was a good match. Now, the final one, basically, again, after a lot of back
this
and forth.
This was a lot, yeah. We had probably about 6 or 7 different matches we spoke about. Decided on this one, which is later, which would probably be, what, 2009?
So this is
2009, yeah.
8 years after all of this, this match happens.
We haven't seen much of Shane in this time. Nah. Obviously, Vince has been on and off TV the whole way through. But obviously, now we all know that Triple H and Stephanie are married.
Yeah.
That's now public knowledge.
Yeah.
And Randy Orton, with his legacy teammates, have set about taking apart the McMahons and Triple H. Basically taking apart Triple H's family.
Yeah, yeah. And it's
Vince has been taken out already. Orton has punted him in the head.
Which, by the way, that moment on Raw was unbelievable. Like,
yeah, brilliant. Orton in this period is by far the best he's ever been.
Yeah, yeah. I was about to say, like, this was the best Orton era. This was the best character Orton ever had. I remember sitting there watching that Raw. I lived at my mum's at the time, and he punted Vince in the head. I was like, fucking hell. Was genuinely a part of me that was like, has that actually gone wrong? They'd done that so well.
It looked so painful as well.
Yeah. And it looked like he booted Vince too hard, basically. Like, obviously, I could tell it was the angle, but I was like, I think he's genuinely actually booted him. It was done so well.
Orton sold it afterwards about the shock on his face. And then, obviously, then we have the setup where he keeps teasing to hit Shane and things stop happening.
Yeah.
And then, in the package before, Stephanie gets involved and in the backstage area, and it looks like Orton's going to punt her in the head.
Yeah.
And Shane dives in front to stop him.
Yeah.
And takes one to the ribs. But that was, like, this point, Orton came across as a proper crazy man.
Yeah. It's as well, the way Shane came back for this match, where you've got him threatening to walk out on WWE and stop them having a WrestleMania because he's going to sue them.
Yeah.
And he's just there going to Stephanie, like, fire me, and all of this stuff. And Steph goes, oh, that'll be too easy. And then Shane McMahon comes out. Now,
just quickly, one thing on Orton, but quickly before we move on, is the whole, this was when he was at his best because you believed it. The nutty, crazy Orton, you believed. You thought, this bloke, we know he's got demons anyway.
Yeah.
But you actually genuinely believed the anger in his face.
Yeah, fully. No, I completely agree with that. And then obviously, with Shane reappearing, it's so weird because obviously Shane's not a wrestler and he's never been a full-time wrestler, but it was believable him coming after Orton and being able to have a fight with him, which kind of shows you how well they've done by Shane over the last 8 years at that point, sort of thing. And again, it's just a simple thing of Shane coming back to defend the McMahon family, sort of thing, and it worked really well.
Exactly, I said my first line spot is you can't beat a revenge angle.
Nah, you really can't, and this revenge angle.
Is this a street fight or no holds barred? Or
I think I don't know.
it's a street fight, is what it's called.
But let's go with street fight. Why not? Because obviously, if Shane McMahon has a match, he doesn't have
one. There's one quick note I actually did put as well. I put, this is such a good build with Triple H, Orton and Triple H. It's so annoying that they fucked up the booking of the Mania match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because they obviously just had it as a one-on-one match and Orton couldn't get disqualified, otherwise he'd lose the title. And it just fucked everything up. They should have just had that as no holds barred, beat the living crap out of each other because it's so personal,
yeah,
and have Triple H win that way. It was so badly booked.
Yeah,
so
and Triple H said himself, didn't he? He said it's the only time in his career he ever felt handcuffed by booking. Because they worked so hard to make this rivalry personal and then added the stipulation if Triple H got disqualified or counted out, he lost the title and it just took the air out of it.
Yeah, basically. Exactly. So Shane takes it to Orton early on, which is quite interesting. Punches to the face. I put methodical Orton is my favourite, like in a ring. When his in-ring style of being methodical was so good to watch. This is why I love him.
Yeah, Orton hits his backbreaker on the outside to start is what gets him in control.
Yeah, yeah.
Exposes the turnbuckle and whips Shane into it and fucking it looks painful. Shane gets a kendo stick and starts nailing Orton. Shane clotheslines him to the outside and then nails Orton with a monitor, which genuinely opened him up. That wasn't...
That looked like a proper...
Even when he hit him, I was like, ooh, that looked like a genuine hit off the head as opposed to like a worked hit. Like he genuinely nutted Orton with a monitor.
Yeah, definitely.
And obviously Orton was opened up hard way at that point. Shane goes up the top. Out comes Legacy.
They save Orton. Shane takes out Cody and Ted, which was interesting booking.
Yeah.
In the fact that you've got two decent young wrestlers getting taken out by Shane, who's probably 40 by this point, 39, 40.
Yeah.
It was interesting. And then it sets Cody up for the coast to coast.
Yeah.
And nails it at full C.
Which is ridiculous. And then... why not? Let's go for a crash and burn. Trying to elbow Orton through the table and misses.
Yeah.
Then when Orton gets him back in the ring, and again, like you say, the methodical thing, he looks so evil from this moment on, doesn't he? Like
He sends Cody and Ted to the back because he wants Ted to make sure Cody's all right. Like obviously.
Yeah.
And then a superplex through the table, which was
unbelievable. Painful
again. Shane. Won't stay down. I love that. I thought that was quality. The face really battling to stay in it.
Yeah, yeah. And then Orton goes for the punt, but his legs hurt. Sorry. Shane hits a spear.
Shane hits a spear, which I thought was a great. But they didn't notice, they called it a tackle.
Yeah, that was
because the reason they called it a tackle is at that point, I assume, Edge is main event, isn't it, in 2009?
Yeah.
So you don't want Edge's main finisher to be used by a mid-card guy to not get a three.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Which was interesting why they called it a tackle. Shane smashes Orton's ankle with a chair.
Yeah, and I love Orton begging off.
That's what I put afterwards, He's brilliant.
He's such an evil bastard at this point, but he's going to beg off against Shane McMahon, which was brilliant. Shane nails Orton with a chair and then sets up to go for the punt himself. And then mid-run, Orton just catches him with an RKO and gets the free count.
RKO, out of nowhere!
My God, Cole uses that saying too much.
this genuinely was an RKO out of nowhere.
Alright, I'll give you that. It was like... and it was a good finish as well, actually. Like, it was so sudden as well. Like, you kind of thought there was going to be more coming.
Yeah.
But he hit the RKO and got the free count. I just wrote a good match. Again, it's more proof that McMahon's go above and beyond what they need to put over their stars as best as they can.
Yeah. What did you give the match?
I gave it a 7.
Yeah, you got 7 from me as well. 7 from me.
Yeah, so, right, here we go. It's like the nitty-gritty. I mean, before we do all the scores, I mean, what would you say about the McMahons?
I think they're incredible, from my personal opinion.
Mm.
As we've said numerous times, they don't have to do any of this.
Yeah.
Any of what they did, they don't have to do. And that's what's nuts and crazy about it. And really, it's testament to them. They care so much about their own business that they were happy to put their bodies on the line for the betterment of TV. Obviously, there's probably a bit of ego in there that they wanted to be involved because
because they wanted to be. Mm. But still, to put your body through that, I think is so admirable.
Yeah, the main one, Shane taking a bump off the fucking Titantron in a match that we dropped and then doing an elbow drop off of one. I'm not good with heights, so I couldn't imagine doing that. But once I've done it once, I wouldn't want to do it again. But yeah. Shane does it, and he does it as, at the time, like second in command. Vince McMahon.
And he's doing it, not only that, he's not doing it just to be the big star. He's doing it in the mid card.
Yeah. Which is unreal. And yeah, no, they both deserve a lot of credit. Vince, for however awkward a man he is, he still does enough with his character that he's good enough in the ring, you know?
Definitely. I mean, obviously, we might as well start there then. Yeah. So we do each of their scores.
And then get an average.
Average between the two of them, yeah. So obviously, in ring, go on, what did you give
him? Right, I gave Vince a 6. In ring, because he's not good in the ring, but he can tell a story, so I wouldn't say shit. Right.
No, that's fair enough.
Shane, I gave an 8.
8, really? I mean, I gave Shane a 7 and Vince a 4.
Okay, alright, so I might be a bit generous, but yeah, good.
Yeah, I just think Vince can tell a story, but I just think his in ring ability, he doesn't sell very well.
Mm.
And if you watch a real Vince's match, he doesn't do moves or anything. He's just his storytelling gets him a 4 for me.
Yeah,
and Shane 7 for me. He can do a lot of things, and he can work well. Again, the same sort of thing is you won't see Shane do many moves.
Yeah,
it's just one of those things. I'm just going. I have to be sensible on the fact that we've given other superstars. 7s.
Do you know what? In fact, I'm going to change the Shane one because that was a bit...
8's higher.
Yeah, 8's very high. I'll put him down to a 7. That is a bit higher, to be honest with you. I agree with that. Character.
Right, their character, I gave Shane an 8.
Yep.
And I gave Vince a 9.5.
Right, I gave Vince an 8.5 and Shane an 8. So it's... Yeah, like they're top of the pile... Character wise, or they're near the top of the pile. Character wise, they're brilliant.
Yeah, oh yeah, no, I think Vince's character, I have to give higher because apart from Austin, what character's been as over as Vince? Probably not many.
Yeah, you're right.
It's the Vince character. Mm. It's not Vince. It's just the Vince character is spot on. So yeah, that's why I gave him such a high rating. Success is an interesting one.
It is an interesting one because. In theory, Vince McMahon is the most successful man in wrestling business. You know, he's killed his competition, but then obviously in the ring he's never achieved. He's been a WWE champion and ECW champion, but like obviously,
I gave him a 9.5 just to say what I gave him a 9.5 and Shane an 8.5. I think they achieved massive success when they were part of like. Most of their rivalries have been successes, hence why I gave them high ratings.
Yeah, I gave Vince a 9 and Shane an 8, so it's not much different, to be honest with you.
Yeah, pretty similar.
What about promo?
Well, promo is interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think they're both very good on the mic.
Same.
I gave Vince a 9.
Right.
And I gave Shane an 8.5.
Okay, all right.
Because I think Vince, there's not many better than Vince on the mic, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think not many people have drawn as much heat as he's managed to get. And Shane, I thought, was always brilliant. I thought Shane held together a lot of rivalries.
Yeah. Yeah, I wasn't far different from that. I went 8.5 for Vince and 8 for Shane. So
yeah, so pretty similar. Yeah.
Yeah. Which gave him a grand total from me of 66.
66. I got a grand total of 67.5.
So that's 66.75.
Yeah.
It's not bad, really.
Well, it's above DDP, isn't it?
Anyone's above DDP. Let me have a look at the standings. I believe it's actually quite high up, to be honest with you. I think, obviously, you've got the ones you'd expect would be above them, but... 66.75 is not bad for people that aren't quote unquote wrestlers. He's above, they're above Samoa Joe.
That's interesting.
They're above Kane, they're above JBL, and they're above RVD, Sting, and DDP. So yeah, they're middle of the pile, basically.
Yeah, which I think's fair. Yeah. I think it's perfectly fair. Obviously, yeah. No, I enjoyed going back and re-looking at that. It reminded me how good the McMahons were.
Yeah,
I'll be honest. It really did. It really did remind me how good they were.
And it was just, do you know what? It was just a bit of fun as well, to be honest with you. Like, because we've done podcasts with big stars where it's like, you've obviously, because of how good they are, it's, you take it more seriously. Whereas with this one, you just get to sit back and just watch two entertaining people perform when they don't have to, basically.
Oh, yeah, exactly, yeah.
And do it to a standard which is acceptable, basically, is probably the best way I can describe it. But yeah, no, I mean, Vince and Shane, I miss Shane McMahon, to be perfectly honest with you. Like, I'd love to see him come back on like a network special and just, I don't know, just give an interview.
Shoot the breeze, yeah. Yeah, he should be one of the ones JBL brings in for that little show he's doing.
Yeah, or even the Austin Live podcast, one of them two, you could.
Oh, that would be phenomenal.
It'd be brilliant. Just to hear from Shane, really. Like, just,
yeah,
to,
I agree.
Because I remember on the Vince McMahon podcast, he said, like, me and Shane were, like, having disagreements towards the end, and basically Shane decided he was going to try and pursue other things, which is kind of like, maybe Shane just got to the end of his tether with Vince and was like, I know what's at the end of this, but I just don't want it if I've got to put up with this anymore, sort of thing. So,
yeah,
it'd be very interesting to hear what Shane was thinking when he was like, I'm leaving now, sort of thing. Because it wasn't that long ago, really. I mean, if you think...
Not really.
2009, he's still wrestling. So he's only been out of the business for 5 years. But the amount of changes in 5 years is unreal.
It is huge. But, I mean, I enjoyed doing it anyway. I definitely enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to doing our next one.
Yeah.
Which we thought we'd follow up on the Mans with a person that really crossed paths with them massively, obviously, and that's Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Do you know what? Because I've watched the matches already, obviously, because I've had a bit of time to do it, and I was so pleasantly surprised with it.
Were you? That's
yeah.
I'm concerned. I won't lie. At this moment in time, having not watched any of the matches, I'm concerned about where Stone Cold's going to end up on the league world.
He definitely outperformed. I was the same as you, mate. To be honest, I was a bit sceptical about it, especially when we were trying to sit there and simmer through matches and struggling. I thought, well, this is going to be shit.
Well, we'll see. That'll be next time for you. So,
exactly. So I'll play you out now with Vince McMahon.
Don't forget to follow us on Kings of the Ring podcast.
That's very true.
Our podcast.
Yeah.
Get in touch with us. If you want to hear us do someone, whatever wrestler you can think of, we're happy to do it.
Yeah.
Just give us a shout.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, leave us a review if you've got the time. Let us know what's good, what's bad. Yeah, no, it's good to be back into the swing of things anyway, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, obviously on that note, I'm John Cooper.
I'm Steve Emerson.
And we'll play you out with Vince McMahon's No Chance in Hell.
See you later. Too strong.